Some people follow the rules, but where's the fun in that? I'm Soraya, and this is Rule Breakers, the podcast where we celebrate the rebels, the misfits, and the ones who make their own way. Every week, I sit down with the biggest rule breakers in sports, entertainment, and beyond to talk about the wildest moments, toughest lessons, and why breaking the rules might just be the key to success. Follow and listen to Rule Breakers with Soraya, an Odyssey podcast, available now for free on the Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Whoa, what's up, Jerry? I'm feeling good today.
Someone's excited.
Oh, man. Yeah, you thought yesterday I was insufferable. Today, my goodness, what a win for the New York Yankees. The best of the season by far. And just continue to add up all the things we've been waiting for this team to do over the last couple days. Add another one. This team has not come from behind at all this year. They haven't.
Well, they did in Toronto. They just didn't
They just
win.
Didn't finish it off and get the win. Correct. But they haven't come back and won a game where they've been down by more than three runs. Last night, it's five after being no hit through seven. They come out there in the eighth. They get two from the Stanton home run. And then the at-bats, Jerry. The at-bats in the ninth inning. And we know now they had a little help with a little bit of a tell on the sliders. But the at-bats in the ninth inning were something that we haven't seen from this team strung together. Even while they've been scoring a ton of runs. It was a thing of beauty. It was a great victory. It's the best win of the year. It's four games in a row. And everything has seemed to change since that play in left field by Cody Bellinger against the Mets and that double play. From that moment on, the Yankees recognize it's time to make tough decisions with aging players. They're putting the right players in the right positions. They're scoring a ton of runs. They're coming from behind. The Williams, the closer on the mound in the 10th. Everything was perfect last night, Jerry.
It's hard to argue. It really is. I mean, you know, you're watching that game, and I'm not going to lie to you. I went to bed. Sixth inning, I had enough. I will be honest with you, too. The pitching early, I mean, Marcus, I can't take it. Every batter's 3-2, and it's such a grind. And they're talking about, if the umpire's not going to give him the pitch. And there were some pitches that were strikes that were called balls, I get it, that were right on the edge, and you do feel for him in that way. But even Paul O'Neill's like, if they're not going to give him that pitch, it's going to be a long night. It's tough to watch, but whatever. Sixth inning.
He can't live in the zone at all. He does not have the stuff to live in the zone.
And he doesn't throw hard enough, all of that, understood. Yeah. So I checked out. And I knew it was a no-hitter, but I also didn't expect it to be one. And then I wake up and I find out, and I watched the last three innings when I got here this morning. You know, the first thing you see is Yankees no-hit into the... I'm like, wow, he took that into the... It's so funny, too. So the kid, he no-hit innings, seven no-hit innings, and he's got two strikes on Jazz.
Yes.
And then you get the base hit through the little hole on the right side. And what does Rice do? Next batter, base hit. It's like they couldn't buy a hit, and then they get two in a row. And don't... This sounds stupid, and I know that given the fact that you had the Stanton home run and you also had the Wells hit and you had the Judge sack fly, but the Volpe slide, probably the best part of that play.
Yep.
It sounds like nothing, but the sack fly just to get on the board at 5-0 kind of gets you going a little bit. And then I heard this little note, too. And I know he's been a starter, so it makes sense, but the first pinch hit home run of Giancarlo Stanton's career.
He's been terrible
at
it.
How about that?
Yeah, no, he's been terrible at it. And Boone talked to it. It's a different role for him. But, you know, throughout most of his career,
he plays.
Yes. So it's the odd day. Like, this is now going to have to start to be something he does regularly because he's just not a necessarily everyday player. But eventually, I think he'll get there. But, yeah. And the thing about it, too, Jerry, with the no-hitter, is I talk about how this felt different. It felt exactly the same for a lot of the game because you said to me out in the newsroom, the first two batters, he can't throw a strike.
I know.
He get the Yankees start after scoring all these runs.
Yeah.
This great pitching staff that we hear about Seattle. Wu's had this incredible year. He comes out. He can't throw a strike. First two guys up and Judge up with nobody out and first two runners on. And they squander that opportunity.
Big time.
And then they get no hit for the next six innings. And you're like, no, I've seen this script before. Yeah. I've seen this exact game from the New York Yankees.
And it also felt, watching it again through the sixth inning, it felt like, hey, we won the first two games of the series. This kid's dominating.
Right.
And I know the guys are going up there trying to get that.
Right.
But it just felt like one of those, you know what? We won the series.
Yeah.
Let's move. And yet, no, there was a lot of fight from this team.
Fight, Jerry.
And it's four in a row now. And you are right. Maybe this team has righted the ship. Again, big weekend coming up against the Cubs.
Yep.
But you have to love what they've done the last four games. Still two out, but that to me means nothing in July. And they're across the board. You got good at bat after good at bat. And Volpe strikes out on the one I thought was a bad pitch. It was probably borderline,
but
whatever.
Up, but yeah.
Then he's got an opportunity. He flies out. But then he starts the inning at second base with the ghost runner, which I can't stand, after Devin Williams was fantastic in the top half.
Mm-hmm.
So you've got Volpe. He ends up at third base with the, I know they tried to bunt, and then you get the intentional walk and the walk. So you got the bases loaded. That ball is not hit far.
Nope.
That is a damn good center fielder. And the fact that he makes, I mean, a hell of a slide. I know it ain't going to get the fans off his back for long, but he essentially wins that game last night.
No. It was a terrific slide. And yeah, there's a, like, we know Dominguez can run, Jazz can run, Volpe can run. That's part of the athleticism of this team that we were looking forward to when the pivot was made off of Juan Soto. But yeah, no, to, you have to take that chance. Absolutely. It doesn't matter how shallow it is. You got to take the chance to score there. And his ability to give that slide, it wasn't so much the prototypical, like, swim where you really give out the left and then go to the right, but it was an incredible slide. He's a very good base runner. He does do some things well, believe it or not. And yeah, absolutely. That moment. And what I hate about replay, by far, my least favorite thing about replay is end-of-game situations like that are in the balance. Mm. Like, you can't celebrate in the moment. You even saw it from the Yankees. There was a very tempered... They didn't even jump out of the dugout to start. Like, you have to wait until that replay, and the ball beat him. The ball beat him by a mile.
And it was a good throw.
It was a good throw. Yep. The ball beat him by a mile. I thought he was going to be called out. You know, pessimistic Yankee fan. I thought that was going to be an out. And to see that slide and for it to be Volpe, and he had an opportunity in the ninth, like you said. Yep. He was unable to come through. But still, important slide, huge part of the win. Hopefully this could be something that can spark him. You know, people have been sparked by weirder things.
Yep.
So hopefully this is something that can turn it around. I did see a lot of Yankee fans on Twitter because I do monitor Yankee Twitter because I'm insane. They were a little bit acknowledging, hey, great slide. You got to give him credit where credit is due. Wish he would have come through in the ninth and he still can't hit, but that was a very impressive slide from Volpe.
And I know we'll get to the Mets next hour. I'm not going to spend much time on them right now, but you know, I think you're right that like one thing can get a guy going in the other direction. I was listening to the first game of the Met game, and Anthony Recker was doing the game on radio, and he was talking about when Vientos hits the double, you know, maybe this, because he wasn't expecting to play. You had the injury with Winker. You know, maybe this is the thing. You never know when it comes.
Right.
And I don't know about Vientos, but perhaps this can there can be some carryover. Volpe comes in a little more confident today, feels pretty good about himself, and maybe we will look back the same way we just might look back on that Bellinger play and say where the season turned. Maybe, just maybe, that's the type of play that gets Volpe going in the right direction.
Yeah, I mean, that's what you hope. You hope he can do it. The general manager to come out and spoke to the fact that he's going to be the solution more than the problem. He's not going anywhere. He is the Yankee shortstop. That's not going to change, at least for the rest of this year. And they need him to be better because, you know, you watch the games. I'm sorry. Like, I'm hoping it can spark him, but 2-0 counts, fastball counts, getting beat. You know, he's just, the swing's a little heavy. He's trying to do too much. He's clearly in his own head. He's been hitting, you know, 150 for the last month and a half. Like, it's bad. So hopefully this can be something that can spark him because they need a better play. And they need someone to lay down the bunt, Jerry.
They tried.
You mentioned
it. They tried.
Oh, my God. If you're going to hit a buck 10 and literally be like the 324th player in Major League Baseball out of 327, you better lay down the bunt, Peraza. Oh, my God. It drove me absolutely nuts.
I don't. You know, it's one thing the older guys will call up and talk about. We don't bunt enough. We don't bunt enough. And they're probably not wrong in some degree. But I do think there are times when it's warranted to do it depending upon the stage of the game, who's up. But no one works on it.
No.
So it's almost like, and I know they're major leaguers, they're making a lot of money, they should know how to do it. Mm-hmm. It's just not a focus anywhere. So then when you ask a guy to go up there and do it, and he pops it up. Yeah, I mean, that's kind of what you get.
He takes a fastball low in the zone and doesn't bunt that, and then bunts the slider that was up and puts it in the air. Very frustrating, but ultimately, just a classic win with classic.
Some people follow the rules, but where's the fun in that? I'm Soraya, and this is Rule Breakers, the podcast where we celebrate the rebels, the misfits, and the ones who make their own way. Every week, I sit down with the biggest rule breakers in sports, entertainment, and beyond to talk about the wildest moments, toughest lessons, and why breaking the rules might just be the key to success. Follow and listen to Rule Breakers with Soraya, an Odyssey podcast, available now for free on the Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Bats.
I did notice yesterday, which I thought was very interesting. Do you realize that on today, July 8th, that we are literally a few days away from a few football teams heading into training camp? We are a few weeks away or a couple of weeks away from most teams heading into training camp. And we are 8 weeks away from the start of the NFL season.
Yeah, I don't like when the football guys put that out, because it feels like you're ruining my summer. You're telling me summer is over and football is beginning.
I would tell you, if you're a football player, you start to feel like summer's over. Like when I played football, Pop Warner back in the day, August 1st was the day. When August 1st hit, you put the pads on, you were at practice, summer was over. That's not the case as adults. I mean, hell, you're going on vacation next week. You've got weeks off in August. So
I sure do.
Your summer's not dead.
My summer's just starting, Jerry.
Well, because people are at the beach finally, down in Bradley Beach.
Correct.
You get to see what's going on. But you have 8 weeks of summer. To be fair, you probably have 12 weeks of summer left because September is so nice. But you are right. Football does signify the end of summer for a lot of people. That having been said, I was thinking back to what we have watched over the last, what would you say, the last 7, 8, aside from the one Giants playoff season, the last 7, 8, 9 years have been horrific football-wise.
Terrible.
In this city. And so now we've got new leadership with the Jets. You've got a whole new quarterback room with the Giants. Same coach, same GM, but it's a different look for sure. You drafted a stud on defense. It feels like for the first time in a while, there's a chance that we could have two. I'm not going to say good. I'm not going to say playoff. And I'm certainly not going to say championship. But we could have two decent football teams in this area. And I will, for me, that it's like a new day, a new dawn, a new birth of football.
I've fallen for this, Jerry, every year when we go out to Giants training camp. It always feels like, oh, this is the year. We've got this pick. We talked to Brian Daboll. He's super confident. We talked to Joe Shane. He's a confident guy, fun-loving family. They all come out with their coffees. It's August. Isn't it going to be great this year? We got such a great defense, and our run game is going to be terrific, and our quarterback really took a lot of steps this offseason. And then they're 2-6, and we're sitting here going, what are we
doing? 1-4.
And I can't be fooled again by them. Until I see something change. And the Jets, it's like, I don't even know. Like right now, off the top of my head, I wasn't sure who the Jets quarterback was. I just thought, all right, Justin Fields.
Does the Aaron Glenn different mentality around the building, that does nothing for
you? Right now, it's false bravado to me. Like, okay. It just feels like he is trying hard to be a badass. And we'll see. Like I'm going to wait and see for all these guys I've gotten so like pumped up in the off season where I'm like, the Giants win total over under is only 7. This is ridiculous.
Bet the mortgage.
And then they don't hit it.
I know. I'm with you. And I do agree with you in the sense of prove it to me first. You're not wrong when you say that. And I've been burned by this too, because the whole Aaron Rodgers thing, it felt different to me. This offseason does feel different to me for both these teams. Again, I am not saying that we've got two 12-win teams, not at all. But I do think we're going to have two teams that we're not going to be sitting there with 6 minutes to go in the first quarter of the first game saying, good God, it's the same crap. I just don't, you've got, the Giants have, if Russell Wilson doesn't work out, you've got Mr. Fun, Mr. Excitement, and Jameis Winston.
That I'm interested in.
Yes, and I think that would bring a different dynamic to watching the games as well. And if that doesn't work out, you've got what they hope is the future quarterback ready in the wings and set to go to take over. Another different reason to watch the team.
Yeah, I think this year the Giants have more reasons to check them out. And if things... The Giants have more things in place for when we suck, we'll make this move. When we continue to suck, we'll make this third move. And they all are kind of interesting. The Jets have Justin Fields, and I don't even know who.
And then what happens?
Right. And how did that end?
Yeah,
and
then you're right. You're not wrong about that.
It doesn't feel as like the Jets don't have really a pivot when things aren't going well.
I would say, though, the thought of Aaron Glenn and the bravado that you speak of, from everybody we have talked to, that just seems like that is his personality. So I agree with you. You could have the guy that's got the reputation to be a player's coach, good guy, and then all of a sudden one day he turns around and he's trying to act like Mr. Tough Guy. That to me would be fake bravado. By all accounts, this is Aaron Glenn. This is the way he was in Detroit with his team, with his defense. This is the way he's going to be here. I don't think he's putting on a show. Like when he did those media scrums when he first got hired and he's glaring at the reporter for asking good questions, I just think that's him. And I think that's going to be good for a team. Like, what is the one thing? If you think back to the 3 or 4, was it 2 years with Rob, 2 years with Rob Saleh, whatever the hell it was, with Rob Saleh, when he got the job, what did we all think? We saw that fire up guy on the sideline in San Francisco, and that's what we thought we were getting.
Yes.
What didn't we get?
Fired up guy on the sideline.
Right. We got a guy who just seemed like Mr. Nice Guy, let the players do whatever. Now, behind closed doors, who knows? But it wasn't what we thought. I think what you see is what you're going to get from Aaron Glenn. And that, for me, if I was a Jet fan, that would actually get me a little fired up.
I don't know why I bought into the Rex Ryan bravado, guy.
Because it worked for a few years.
Yeah, but even when he first got here, I bought into it. The Aaron Glenn thing, I don't know. I'm just not buying into it. Like, I just don't think it's a real... Like, I don't think that's his real personality. Well, I think he's like a dog, Jerry. He'll bark at you, but will not bite you.
Well, we're going to find out, because if that's the case and the players run all over him, you'll know very quickly. And yeah. I just don't think that's the case. The thing with Rex, came from Baltimore, part of it is, you talk about, and as you have many times, you didn't like Rex when he lost the weight. He had this... There was just a feeling around him.
Yeah, thin Rex with big fake white choppers.
I forgot about the teeth, too. Like, when he walked into the room, it was almost like he commanded the room as the big guy. And then, yes, it did change. But I think his messaging was done the right way. He didn't back down. And most importantly, they won. And he brought in players that helped them win and kind of change things around. And I do think Aaron Glenn's got a chance to do that. But also... So, like, if you look at this year, so we're here in New York, and if the Giants turned out to have a good season and were even a playoff contender, let's put it that way, a playoff contender right around Thanksgiving, I don't think much of the country, meaning NFL fans, would be shocked, because that seems to be the nature of the sport. Like, one of the things I put down on the sheet today, I was thinking back to, like, when I was a kid. It seemed like in the 80s, there was a formula. You would suck, you would draft a good quarterback, he would sit for a year or two, then he would get in, and you know what? All of a sudden, you would see the progression, and you'd be a playoff team. In this day and age of free agency, and throwing quarterbacks in right out of the draft, like, you could have a really good season, or you could be garbage, like the Broncos last year. I mean, that was a little quick, wouldn't you think, to be in the postseason playing the Bills in Orchard Park?
Yes.
Right. So I think a lot of the rest of the country, if you said the Jets or Giants were better this year, wouldn't be shocked. It's just us here that have a hard time believing it because of what we've seen for 8, 9, 10 years.
I think most people still don't think the Jets will have a good year. We've just not seen it ever.
All right.
Since Rex Ryan.
The Jets might be a different situation.
Yeah, Jets are a different situation.
But the Giants are a type of team that if you told me they were better... Not a lot of people. Remember, it's not that long ago that they won the playoff game in Minnesota, so they have had a little taste of it. The problem has been it's just been horrific since because the quarterback play has been so poor, which we do think they have fixed.
Yeah, and you got the Eagles in your division, the Jaden Daniels.
Details.
Commanders, your Dallas Cowboys, Jerry.
Details.
They're all good teams in that.
They are.
Division.
I do agree the Giants have a tougher road if you look at the other three teams in the division compared to, like, the Jet thing is interesting because the Patriots do not seem like they're going to be any, I don't think they're going to be any good this year. Perhaps next year in Mike Vrabel's second season. The Dolphins seem to be a mess. Yeah, we could talk about the Asante Samuel thing because I think the way he perceives the Dolphins is an issue. And I saw you wrote that down in terms of, his dad has this podcast talking about how soft these guys are.
The Asante Samuel dad?
Yeah.
Could you imagine, listen, of all your podcast choices, and you go, you know what? The guest on Joe Rogan this week doesn't seem interesting. Let me see what Asante Samuel's dad's podcast
well,
is.
Well, he was a good player in the league, at least.
Where did he play?
I think you're getting confused. It's Asante Samuel. This is Asante Samuel Jr.
Oh, he's got a kid playing football? Yeah,
yes.
Oh. Yeah, I've heard of Asante Samuel Jr., of course. Legendary football player.
So he's the one looking.
He's got a kid playing football now?
Well, did you see? All right, did you see Larry Fitzgerald's kid?
I did see that.
Committed to Notre Dame.
But that's college.
Al, we're getting old.
Yeah, there's a weird progression that happens. Like you go, okay, I'm a kid watching baseball. Look at Willie Randolph playing second base. He's awesome.
Mm-hmm.
And then, oh, Willie Randolph is retiring.
He's the Met manager.
Right, and then Willie Randolph's the manager. Then yeah. He retires from that.
Correct.
Then it's like, oh, Willie Randolph's in the Hall of Fame. I don't know if he's getting it, but then it's like, oh, Willie Randolph's dead. And you're like, I was just watching Willie Randolph
I know.
Play second base.
Mm-hmm.
Now he's still alive, right, Jay?
Willie Randolph is still alive. Yes. Yes, he is.
But I'm just saying, like,
how about Ken Griffey Sr., Ken Griffey Jr.?
Yeah.
We saw Griffey Sr., then Jr. comes up. We watch his entire career. He's been retired now for 15 years.
Yeah. I know. I don't like it.
That's the nature of life.
So in my head, Asante Samuel was a free agent looking to maybe go to the Dolphins. I did not realize his child was.
I think this is his kid.
Oh.
But you've got that all over. You got Joey Porter Jr. in Pittsburgh. I remember what he was back in the day. I mean, like I said, think about you started here in what? In September of 07.
Correct. Right? Yes.
It is now 2025. That's 18 years ago, Al.
You got Marvin Harrison Jr.
Yes. Yeah. Time just goes, man.
And Arch Manning is whose kid?
That's a good question. Isn't it Peyton's nephew and Eli's nephew? So is it
Cooper?
Is it Cooper's kid?
I'm going to say yes.
Rami said what? You said yes?
Cooper's kid.
So Rami's telling me it's Cooper's kid.
Where's Peyton Manning's kids?
Does he have boys? He does have boys. I think they're younger.
Well, I got to get.
Because I've seen him in the flag football stuff.
Flag football?
Yes. I could be wrong. I think Texas already signed him to a nil deal in 2035. Yes,
yeah.
Exactly.
All right.
So, I
don't
know.
Get it together. It's not 1997, you old f***. Exactly.
You're right. Hmm. But I don't know. I look at the Jets in a much better situation because of that division they're in. And yes, the Bills are clearly the best team. And you would think should be in the Super Bowl this year. But other than that, they've got a chance to win some games in that division.
Here's what happens. Let's say the Giants, a week one, Russell Wilson goes down. We got Jameis Winston.
Yeah.
He goes down. Jackson Dart. Justin Fields goes down. It's Tyrod Taylor.
I know.
And then I actually have the Jets. It's Tyrod Taylor, Adrian Martinez, and Brady Cook.
Well,
who are these people, Jerry?
If you get to those two, it's they're in a lot of trouble. And a lot of trouble.
That's what I'm saying. But, like the Jets, they've no depth at the quarterback to get excited.
So you're not buying any of this optimism I
no,
have for these two teams.
Not for the Jets.
The Giants are watchable to you. The Jets, none.
Yeah, even if the Giants lose, I think they will be watchable because of the interesting quarterback situation we've got.
Better storylines.
We got three guys, and Tommy DeVito, who I still am not done with. If he gets, you know what I'm saying? Like, I can name the four guys currently quarterbacking the Giants that are still somewhat intriguing, all four of them. The Jets have one.
And yet what's interesting is they've been the less intriguing story the last few years.
They have.
Because of the quarterback situation and scenario, except for when Tommy DeVito was playing.
Oh, he was the best, Jerry. What a
with legend. Cheese.
Yeah. Who had a better run, Tommy DeVito or Jeremy Lin?
You know what?
Like that
Jeremy Lin.
Fun
it's
run.
Not even close, Jeremy Lin. Tommy DeVito had a nice run. There's no question. Jeremy Lin lit the city on fire.
Yeah, it's true.
And it was, what would you say, Eddie? About a month for Jeremy Lin, maybe
yes.
even 6 weeks, something like that. Remember? Do you remember the game when he hit the three in Toronto from like 5-6 feet behind the 3-point line? I mean, it was nuts.
I will tell you, I actually put on a regular season Knicks game that year.
I believe it. I
for a few it. Minutes, and I was like, what am I watching?
Understood, but even you were drawn to it.
I was
for
drawn
a few
to
minutes.
It. Yes, I was.
Tommy DeVito was interesting, and it was a fun story for a short time, but it was really just a few games. And when you look back, they didn't win a ton of games with him, but he was fun to watch.
Remember that first game they put him in? They would not let him throw
yes.
a football.
Handoff, 3rd and 23, handoff.
We didn't think the guy could throw a football.
I think he threw the ball like 4 times that game.
Yeah, that was very strange.
But it also goes to show and goes to prove how desperate football fans were, Giant fans were, to see, not that game in particular, but when he started to throw the football, to see what it looked like to actually play the ball downfield and not sideline to sideline. And it seemed like they could actually do something that they hadn't done, score touchdowns.
Mm.
So starved for it. They will have an opportunity this year with some quarterbacks that should be fun to watch, but I'm feeling it. It's July 8th. I saw it was at the Bill. One of these teams is reporting like 3 or 4 days to training camp, and you can say it on the air, Rami. It's okay.
The Chargers.
The Chargers. The Chargers will be in camp in a few days. Like, it, summer's not over. I'm not saying that, but the NFL right around the corner. And I got to be honest with you, I'm excited for the season.
Some people follow the rules, but where's the fun in that? I'm Soraya, and this is Rule Breakers, the podcast where we celebrate the rebels, the misfits, and the ones who make their own way. Every week, I sit down with the biggest rule breakers in sports, entertainment, and beyond to talk about the wildest moments, toughest lessons, and why breaking the rules might just be the key to success. Follow and listen to Rule Breakers with Soraya, an Odyssey podcast, available now for free on the Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
I was bringing up the fact that as fans, you know, it's hard to disconnect the salary to the player. Now, Volpe's a different scenario because he's a young kid not making a lot of money, so it doesn't apply there. But in a lot of cases, it does. I would certainly make the case that someone like Giancarlo Stanton, when he has had his struggles in the race, and he's been a fabulous postseason player for the Yankees, we'll never take that away from him, and he's been a good Yankee, but he has had his struggles in the regular season. And I think a lot of fans, they get annoyed when a guy's making $25, $30, $35 million a year, and they don't perform as such. I think a lot of Met fans were patient with Juan Soto in the early going, but there were some that, you know, right out the gate, hey, you want $765 million, damn it, hit the baseball. And it brings me to the NBA from this standpoint. And they won a championship, so all power to them. But these contracts and these salaries are getting to, I thought we were at ridiculous levels already. When you see a guy get a, you played professional sports.
Yeah.
You see 4 years, $285 for Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. Right. And I know they just won a championship, MVP, all of that. I understand that. I can tell you what, as a...
Guaranteed, by the way.
Guaranteed. What a sports fan thinks. As the former pro athlete, you think what?
In reference to...
In reference to now the money that's being made, the growing... It's not even a gap anymore. I mean, it is a crater between the pro player and the fans in terms of wealth.
Yeah.
And then the expectation that comes along with it.
Well, listen, I think for the fan, there's this sense of, they look at the ball player as a sense of, as a sense of escape, right? I think they look at the contract, the team they cheer for, and the expectation all wrapped up in one, and they throw the contract out there because, listen, most people day-to-day, right now, living check to check, right? And so they look at you as an escape. Be the walk-in fantasy that I want. I hope I could live. I hope one day I could play this sport that I love and also make a gazillion dollars doing it. Since you get to do it, I need you to be the best at it. There are no days off because of the contract
for sure
you are currently earning. And two, because I'm paying to come see you. So I'm not only giving my money to see you, but I'm also jealous of the money you're making, and I don't want to hear you gripe about it. You're my escape. And so when you aren't the escape, and you don't meet my expectation, whatever that is, I'm going to call, I'm going to shout, I'm going to scream into the ether. Hopefully the arrow that I shoot lands right in the middle of your back to wake you up so I can you can be the escape I need you to be. And so that's the life of a ball player. And the humanistic side gets avoided because of the contract, right? I don't care that you're having issues at home. I don't care if you're dealing with, you know, maybe some issues from a substance abuse issue. You know, I don't care that you're an older ball player and now you're starting to see the light at the end of the tunnel. And that's scared. That's giving you your own self anxiety. How many guys walk off the field and realize, like, man, this is a wrap.
Yep.
You know, now I'm going from God to citizen, which is hard for a lot of ball players to deal with. I've been off the field for a long time and I still, like, man, you know, that phone, I used to be able to call anybody, like, hey, Willie wants to do it. Well, Willie got it. Now I'm like, well, I'll get back to you in a month. You know what I mean? It's like, so that's the reality we deal with, and it's tough. And for a young guy like Volpe or a young guy like SGA, you know, they're living in a window where they're considered gods, and so they're being perceived at it. And it's some that's the pedestal we put our athletes on. It is what it is.
And I do think part of that, and this is where, you know, I know it has to be out there because we're living in a salary cap world. But there's the part of you that, me anyhow, as the sports fan, I don't want to know what they make. Like, I know it's absurd amounts of money. I don't want to know. I don't want to have that reaction of, God, for $80 million a year. And that, like, that's where we're going here. Yeah. I'm sorry, he's 72, I think. For $72 million a year, you can't miss that free throw.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but we forget, like, you still got to actually make the free throw. It's this. Yeah. It's not robotics. It's not a video game. It is still very real. But as fans, we feel like you're not allowed to fail if you're going to make, you're going to take all that money. Well, and that's not the world we live in, and I know that.
And it's even tougher, and it goes back to what we were talking about, Volpe's dad in the stands ready to beat up a Mets fan. You know, I think for the parents watching their kids out there or watching their respective son or daughter that's a pro athlete, you know, they're still their baby girl. That's mm-hmm. still their baby boy out there. Yep. And so it's a different level of, you know, heightened anxiety and fear that, like, man, if my son doesn't get it done in this spot, you know, all of Yankee Stadium may be running after him.
Oh,
you know
and what I mean? Booing, it, sure.
Booing, booing
oh,
the hell. Yeah. Like, I said this to you. When we started the show, week one, Steelers Jets,
mm-hmm.
Aaron Rodgers is coming back to MetLife.
Yeah.
There won't be another athlete booed harder than that man will be booed in all of professional sports and all of football.
Let me ask you this one, because I don't remember when Brett Favre went to Lambeau as a Viking.
Okay.
That had to have been brutal. I know he's back now and they love him again, but that had to have been loud. No,
I don't know. I don't. I couldn't tell you. But I know who's going to get booed.
Oh, he's going to get booed.
Aaron Rodgers is going to get the helmet, like the paint, booed off his helmet.
You know the weird thing about that is, though, and I understand it didn't go well here for sure. And maybe we hear from Jet fans. The first year, that first offseason of Rodgers could not have been more perfect in terms of the way he was embraced. He was at Madison Square Garden. He was on the talk shows.
He was Cipriani's. He was everywhere.
And it was tremendous. And it was like they got themselves a Hall of Fame quarterback, and it was going to be different than Favre, and this was going to be unbelievable.
He was the savior.
He did remember the preseason game? He was the Hall of Fame game. He didn't play, mm-hmm. but he was there. He was coaching up Zach Wilson, and mm-hmm. he looked like a coach on the sidelines.
Not even that, Jerry. Remember when Hard Knocks came, and when Hard Knocks was covering the Jets? And they were throwing, he was throwing balls around the field, and they were throwing it in slow motion.
Yes.
And it was just like, it was like football.
It was godlike.
It was like, oh my God.
Yes.
Mind you, we've been watching Aaron Rodgers for years.
He's having catches with Salah's son.
No question. And we was just like, oh my God. Like, finally, it was just like an awakening was happening, a movement, you know, a turning of the tides. And
then what happens?
He tore the
Achilles ruptures.
Yeah. And Monday night against the Bills.
And this is a serious question, had he not gone on McAfee, had he not had that whole nonsense, not his fault, but still the whole RFK thing and running for president and vice nonsense that was out there because mm-hmm. he is who he is, had he stayed quiet and just rehabbed and just been Aaron Rodgers, the football player, even with the way the season went last year, I don't think he would come back and get booed. I think it's because there was so much crap surrounding him while he wasn't playing that the Jet fan they turned. And then when he does come back, because he wasn't healthy when he came back and started.
No, he wasn't. No.
The Jet fan had enough.
Well, I think that he was the poster boy for the I had enough with the Jets. Like
absolutely.
And so I think, which is interesting because we only had him for 2 years. We forget the Zach Wilson era. We forget the Sam Darnold era. We forget everything that came along behind him. But because of who he is and what he brought to the table and in a fashion how he was delivered to the Jets, a lot of Jets fans are like, we're finally out of the grave.
I know.
And now,
I picked them to win the Super Bowl. I thought that, and we'll never know because of the stupid injury. We'll never know. But I really thought they were primed to make a Super Bowl run.
But this goes to what we talked about a little while ago behind the curtain. This is why the first four games of this season for the New York Jets are so important.
Mm.
Because of what this team been through and has gone through, they got to win early.
It'd be nice to see one of these two teams, if not both of them, get out to decent starts.
The Jets, more importantly. I think the Giants are going to be fine. I think whatever. We'll see.
Tough schedule on paper.
But I think the Jets have to somehow set sails in the right direction. They can't go 2-2. Like, they got to come out hot.
Sure.
Just to get that stank off them. And hopefully they're able to do so.
Yeah, very interesting, that whole Aaron Rodgers dynamic. And I'll give you one more before you take the call. I'll tell you another one. I talk about staying quiet. All right, well, we're talking about Aaron Boone, you know, shielding his players. I mentioned the RFK thing. I mentioned the McAfee stuff. How about something as simple as the whole Mike Williams thing?
Oh, yeah.
If you don't...
Well, that was
you,
that was different.
And I'm not saying he wasn't wrong on what he's saying, but if
Well, no, he was wrong because what he said in the press conference goes, when asked about it on McAfee, about his marks about his remarks about Mike Williams and kind of selling him out, if you will, Aaron was like, well, you know, I don't lie. And everybody's like, dude, you lied about taking a...
He didn't lie. He misled. He did not lie. He never lied. He misled.
What does that mean?
It can mean what you want it to mean, but it was not a direct lie.
Okay.
He never, because, not to go down this road again.
I don't want to go down the road.
I had battles.
But my point is.
I had battles with Sal about this for a month.
Right. And I don't want to, but my point is misled, lied, whatever. My point is, don't say you, every ball player's lied on the mic.
Absolutely. So but as I'm saying.
Doesn't like, make him a villain, but don't say like you've kept it 100 your whole career.
Not a villain, but he could have, after that game, just said, yeah, you know, we weren't on the same page. Next question. Instead, it's, well, he's supposed to be here, and I threw
it down the red line.
It was just another thing that created noise around him. It just seemed like there was always something. It was just the game.
It was also tough because they had rehabbed Mike Williams onto the field.
Right.
He didn't land on the Jets healthy. He came from San Diego. He was already dealing with a number of injuries. He was getting acclimated into the system. Here he is trying to find his way onto the field. And if there's one person that needs your back as a receiver, is your quarterback.
Yeah.
And so it felt like, to your point, it felt like, dang, dog, this ain't the time for you to abort the mission. Because it felt like he was putting his hands up at this, like, I don't know what you want me to do. I've torn my Achilles. You know, this thing is not going to plan. I've emptied my Rolodex of who I felt like I could bring over to help us. Nothing's working. So it felt like at that moment he was putting his hands up.
It did sound like that. And it did feel like it.
So at that point, Jesper was like, whoa, whoa, whoa. You can't leave. You can't leave now. This is not when you end the movie, Jack. We're gonna ride this thing out. And then Aaron Rodgers and his face and his expressions felt like, I'm done with this whole thing.
Now, that said, he said the right things at the end. And
I thought he did.
This was more a Woody Johnson, get him the hell out of here.
Correct.
But even still, here is Joe and Boca Raton. What's up, Joe?
Hey, I just want to respond to a couple of things you guys said about athletes getting paid all this money.
Yeah.
People can't relate to it, but guess what? If they're that good, I mean, I don't make $300,000 a year. I'm not good at the sport. I work for a living. They work out. I think the problem that I see, I'm down in Boca. I want to see the Marlins. I know the product I'm getting, $30 parking a ticket and all. Went to Palm Beach Cardinals, affordable, great time. I go to Yankee Stadium, Fenway Park. It's costing me a boatload of money. You have 3 stars sitting out that day. And I know stars get hurt. Believe me, I can't believe it. They're athletes. They're in great shape. They get hurt. Sometimes you need a break. What I can't relate to is I don't understand. I need a day off. I need a day off.
Well, I happen to agree with you. When you're getting paid the money they're getting paid, and it's really not an issue in the NBA anymore like it used to be. I really do think they've done a much better job with that. But the minutes restrictions that we know so many fans get crazy about, to me, they're making a fortune. Yeah, they should go out there and play. I have no issue when you've got a coach like a Tom Thibodeau that likes to play 7 guys. You're making a lot of money. And there's a lot of guys that make a lot of money that don't play much.
Correct.
I mean, it's a weird league in that sense, too. You got guys that might average 4 minutes a game. They make $5 million a year. Like, damn. Okay, I mean, good for you, I suppose. Here's Ray. Boy, a lot of calls from out of town. Ray in Daytona Beach. What's up, Ray?
Yeah, hey guys. I don't understand this argument about people getting PO'd about salaries when, first of all, they're a small group of people that reach that. They spend their whole lives trying to get to that point. You're talking about maybe 1% of the NBA or professional players making that kind of money. Most of them don't make that money.
They all make a lot of money.
The base salary for a ball player, I think, is like $400,000.
$700,000.
$700,000, okay. But how many make it? Most of them are in the minors. They wash out.
What does that have to do with anything? I'm not sure. I'm not getting your point.
My point is entertainers, singers, actors, CEOs of companies, nobody complains about
them. No, people complain about CEOs of companies making way too much money all the time. Now, your point about actors and singers, the thing I would say differently about that compared to the athlete is there's no fandom attached to it. There's no emotion attached to it like there is. Like, you feel like when you go, if you're a diehard Yankee fan, and I mean, I've heard you say numerous times this morning, we.
We, yes.
Have you ever gone to see I don't know, AC/DC and said, we're going to have a great show tonight?
Never.
No, I'm serious. Like, when you go see a band or you go see a movie, you ever take your wife to a movie and be like, man, we're going to kill it tonight on the big screen?
No.
No, but when you're watching the game, you feel like you are a part of that team for the rooting interest. And it's different.
It is. I mean, especially when you, like a lot of people who are fans of these teams, they born and raised here. They've seen the economic change and turnover of a city year after year. I mean, if you're a Yankee, if you're a Mets fan from the 80s when the Mets was at the pinnacle of rock stardom, if you will, to where they are now, I'm like, you've seen some things.
No doubt.
Seen this city turn over. You've been through a lot. And so, yeah, you go to bed with this team and you wake up with this team because that's all you know and that's all you choose to cheer for. But at the end of the day, you still have emotional vested interest on how your team moves along. So
And keep in mind, the point I'm trying to make is the more money they make, I feel like the more fans feel like they can say whatever the hell they want 100%. To say. That's not the. If a movie bombs, guess what happens to that actor? He ain't getting the same amount of money in the next movie.
No.
I mean, it's just, you know, but these guys, if you're making $50 million a year and you are in it,
but like
I
you
mean,
said,
in it,
we got,
fans are going to let you hear
Mets
it.
Mets fans got Soto for 15 years.
Oh, I know.
That's, in their eyes, you belong to us.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, we're invested in everything you do and on
way,
and off the field.
You better perform because that is a monster contract. They talk about contract setting franchises back a decade. If a 15-year, nearly $1 billion contract doesn't go well, that sets you back 20 years.
No question. But not even that. Talking about overall fandom, like, people are still selling Bobby Bonilla dick.
I know. I'm tired like of that, too, but yes.
Like,
he's got like 7-8 years left on that?
I think to 2035.
Oh, I thought it was 32. Is it 35?
I think it's 35. Huh.
So we get 10 more years, the guy gets paid. God bless him. Smart man right there.
Brilliant.
Smart man. All right, we'll take a break. We'll get CeeLo in here. Next, it is Willie and Jerry in for Boomer and Geo.
It's the Morning Show with Boomer Esiason and Greg Giannotti. Boomer and Geo.
Hi, great to have you with us on a Monday morning. Boomer and Geo are out until next Monday. Coming to you live in the Built Ford Tough Studio. So myself and Willie Colon will take you till 10 o'clock. We will get back to the calls. I'll take one quick one as CeeLo is getting
CeeLo
all set up just because I like what Al put in for the topic. Brian in Shrewsbury, what's up, Brian?
You guys got a shut
you
the heck
guys
up.
Gotta shut up.
Oh, yeah.
Instead of being whiny bitches about
whiny
size.
Bitches.
This is the capitalist
Brian
system, you guys. What the hell do you want? You want a salary
Jackass.
Cap? Get a salary cap.
Oh,
you're
salary
so
cap.
Whiny.
Whiny beer.
Get a big crunch. Suck it up, you
How
guys.
How about this,
shut
Brian?
The
How
up?
About you take the wax out of your ears and understand what we're saying? We're actually siding with the players in this situation, and you're calling us whiny biatches. I'm not really sure the point of your call other than you're a jackass. The point is, the more they make, the more criticism they get.
Correct.
So I'm not sure where he was going with that other than if you're going to make the money, you better perform or the fans are going to clobber you. Seems pretty simple to me.
I understood what you were trying to say.
I thought so.
Never heard you do that voice, though.
Me neither.
I don't think I've
ever done that voice. But that was weird. Because the whole point is if you're gonna make this type of money, the fan behavior is gonna get worse and worse because they get on you if you don't produce for making $30, $40, $50 million a year. I also do think,
but it goes back to what we were saying. I say the current state of sports, the people see the contract before the man.
Right.
That's where
they
that's
see money. They
see
don't
them,
see the player.
Right. They don't care about what you've been through, what you got going on, and how you acquired whatever. They know you make it an insane amount of money.
Yep.
And they want to see you be the superstar.
Like, you're not allowed to fail.
No.
That having been said, I wouldn't mind a better system where you actually get paid to when you do well. Meaning, like, I always argue with Boomer, you know, Boomer's like, well, you're getting paid for what you're going to do. I'm like, no, you get paid for what you just did. The new team is hoping that you continue to do that.
Potential.
And in some cases, that doesn't happen. Your best days might be behind you and you get the big contract. And then you falter. To me, I have no problem paying a guy a fortune if he's productive. I think he's great. That's exactly what it should be. But you have some of these guaranteed contracts. I mean, hell, was it Eddie Curry with the Knicks back in the day, right? Wasn't that
brutal?
And that's a rare. I'm not saying there's a lot. But those contracts happen.
Exist all the time.
Where the guys sign these deals and do nothing. And it's guaranteed. I mean, good for them. But you're going to hear it from the fans.
Yeah, and when you don't perform well, the first thing out their mouth is, you make $80 million.
Yes.
You should be doing it.
So. And that was the point.
Yeah,
so,
I got you.
Brian, sorry you misunderstood. And joining us now in studio is a man who everybody knows if you like comedy, and he's got a one-man show coming to Broadway starting August 5th. It's called Take a Banana for the Ride at the Niederlander Theater. Am I
Correct.
Saying that right?
Yes, legendary 103-year-old Broadway theater.
Look at that. And that voice is none other than Jeff Ross. Jeff, thank you very much for coming in. How are we doing?
Great. Great to be here with the subs.
By the way, anytime we ask for guests, I always tell Al, our producer, make sure they know that Boomer's not here and Gio's not here.
You know what? It's fine. I love playing with the injured list.
It's about right.
But let's get these guys off the bench.
I know. We do look like a cop duo, right? Like the typical sitcom cop duo.
I would tell you, though, you are sitting in the studio with a Super Bowl champion.
Oh, I'm well aware.
So, thank you. Thank
we've got that at least.
I'm well aware. So, I feel sorry for that stool he's sitting on. That stool's going to need a replacement next week.
I said to him, he looks like my father. I feel like a child sitting next to him.
Because he's so robust.
Huge. Yes. Yeah. Robust is a good word.
You look great, Willie.
Thank you.
You make me feel small.
I don't know how to receive that because you got a banana on your chest.
You know, I'm always representing.
And that is the name of the show. So before we get to some other stuff, talk about the show. Like, how did this come about after the career you've had? Why did you want to do this and why now?
That's a good question. This is a, you know, I was coming off the Tom Brady roast, and I just wanted to change things up. I'd been roast mode. And I had some time to think about it. I went in for a colonoscopy. I went in for to see my shrink. I went to the dentist. Like, I was doing all the...
Did the car wash.
All that. Yes, I like that. I like that, champ. The car wash. I was taking care of myself. And I was coming off losing three good buddies within 8 months. Mm. Three comedy legends. Bob Saget, Norm MacDonald, and Gilbert Gottfried all passed away back to back to back. And it made me think about 30 years ago when I lost my grandfather and my parents. And I was like, wow, I still kind of think the same things that I thought then about loss and bouncing back. And I kind of said, well, I think maybe it's time to look back a little bit. I'm always looking forward. And I look back and realize that I had a lot of experience with this kind of stuff that I could share with people who might be going through some stuff. So I wrote a show that's like a cathartic experience for anybody going through loss or hardship. It's almost like a pep talk. Sometimes I feel like a coach up there, but yet it's like blistering funny, and I roast people and I roast myself and the audience gets involved. And so it's kind of a fun night out wrapped around some tough experiences. And it just felt like the next thing to do to keep my, you know how it is. You got to keep your audience guessing and surprised. So
yeah,
it's called Take a Banana for the Ride.
And that comes from your grandfather, if I heard you say that correctly, right?
This is my grandfather's ring. It's a bolt from a Nazi submarine from World War II. He was a shipbuilder in Baltimore, and the U.S. Navy somehow captured a Nazi sub, turned the whole war around. They dragged it back to America. My Pop Jack was in the crew that worked on it. He pulled this bolt off, sanded it down, made a ring out of it. Damn. And we lived together during my open mic days here in New York. And whatever, I need a little pep talk, I tapped this ring on something. And my grandfather, I would take him to his doctor appointments all day. And at night, I'd go into New York and do open mics. And he'd always give me money for the bus and a banana.
And that's where it comes from.
Take a banana for the ride. I'm like, Pop, I don't need a banana. He's like, potassium could save your life. You get stuck in traffic. And it was his way of saying, I can't go with you, but I'm on the trip with you in spirit. And also, anything can happen in life. And it's a good message to remember.
Well, the question is, how much preparation goes into this? Because I know you said it's cathartic, so I guess you're just talking from the heart and from experience, but it's not easy being vulnerable, especially, I mean, as a comic, that's kind of part of the gig.
Yeah.
But it's a different level because people kind of have pigeonholed you as being the roast guy.
Sure.
But now we're looking into the soul of the guy who's the king of the roast.
Appreciate that. Well, you know, I wouldn't get away with roasting people for 30 years if I didn't have a soul. I only roast the ones I love. This show is a chance to sort of keep the names alive of some of the people who made me who I am. And all the roasting comes from an affectionate, loving place. And people don't always realize that. They think it's bullying. They think it's mean. But the truth is, I go against the bullies. I fight against that kind of that stuff. I never make fun of people behind their back anymore. It's always to their face.
That's what real men should do,
yeah,
by the way.
Which is what real smack talk should be. I learned this playing high school football and doing karate tournaments as a kid. It all comes from sports. So that's what toughened me up as a kid. When I was 6 years old, I was getting bullied at school. I tell all these stories, a lot of these stories in the show. I was getting bullied, and I was living in Newark, New Jersey, and my mom was worried about me, so she dragged me to a karate class where all the kids took turns beating me up until I got tough and learned hard work and discipline. And 10 and a half years old, I became the second youngest black belt in New Jersey.
How about that?
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I see it in your eyes. It's hard to believe, but it's true.
No. Well, you're a bald guy with a bandana on your shirt. I think that was in your wheelhouse. Like, you know what I mean?
Taekwondo, baby.
That's and we've got Al inside. Now, Al is 56, and he has been telling me for at least 10 years that he wants to learn, like, jiu-jitsu. Or is he too old?
You're never too old to learn something new.
I don't want to put the work in, though. Like, I just wish I knew it already. Like, that I had
this
done
isn't the
this.
Matrix. We can't plug you in somewhere, Al.
Yeah, like, it's not AI for karate, you know, K-A-I-R-T. But
like,
no.
You must feel very confident walking the streets. Like, if someone attacks you, you can take them down.
I always felt like I could defend myself and whoever I'm with.
Yeah, and I'm talking about confidence. I mean, a lot of people don't have that.
It gave me some swag at an early age. And I remember breaking up fights. People would pick on kids at school, and I remember stepping in. And I wasn't tough, but I was trained.
Mm.
And it's there. It's just there. Like, it's self. You know, the two self-defense mechanisms my parents left me with were martial arts and a sense of humor. And those two things can really protect you. And if you can laugh your way through life, you really can survive almost anything.
Is that, and we're talking with Jeff Ross, so previews begin Tuesday, August 5th, opening night, Monday, August 18th. It goes for 8 weeks. One-man show called Take the Banana for the Ride.
Yeah.
Tickets at jeffrossbroadway.com. Is that how you, I mean, you talk about the loss, it's a lot that you were talking about. Is that kind of what you pull from to kind of get through all these tough times?
You know, I pull from the happy memories. Like, I'm not one to drag feet or feel sorry for myself. Like, my grandfather, who I mentioned earlier, he never felt sorry for himself. And he outlived his wife and his daughter. And he was what he called world beater energy, that old school energy. And I try to channel that and remember the good stuff. And that's where I live, in those memories. Try to stay positive. I'm a very Bob Saget was my dear pal.
I loved that. I had the opportunity to interview him. He was shockingly refreshing.
Yeah.
In a weird way, because we just see him from Danny Tanner's Full House and all that nonsense. But he was a man's man.
Yeah.
He wasn't like this shrimpy tall guy. Like, he had everything you wanted. You know what I mean? He was a man's man. He could talk love. He was sensitive, but he was rough at the same time. I enjoyed him. I interviewed him during my time in Barstool. I want to ask you this because I think you mentioned something. We live in a world where bullying is wrong.
Yeah.
But you live in a world where bullying is
right.
It's right in how you make your living. Doing these roasts, and obviously you've done them all and all the big names, has there ever been a situation where somebody's come back and be like, that hurt, Ross?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, you know, it's happening now. Tom Brady is definitely deserves the Nobel Peace Prize. I mean, that was the meanest roast in history.
Also one of the most popular ones.
And it was 2.5 billion viewing minutes on Netflix.
Yeah, killed.
And it changed all the lives of the people involved in a good way. So sometimes the roast can go a little too far, and I think that's what people tune in for.
100%.
You know, I want to, like, scratch the skin, not break it. I want everyone to leave there going, that was the most fun. I want to do that again. I can't wait to see that again. Wait till my family wakes up tomorrow. I'm going to tell them all the jokes. Like, that's the win for me. That's what I love. That's why I've been able to do it for so long.
How different, though, now to us? So you started doing the roasts about 30 years ago,
something
would you say?
Like that, okay, yeah. Right here
so
in New York.
Late 90s, around that time?
Yeah, okay. Mid-90s was my first one. I roasted Steven Seagal.
he seems like a blast.
He was not a blast.
He was not.
I don't even think he got the jokes. We had to translate them into Steven Seagal talk.
Makes sense. All right, so from that point to now, it is a different world. And, you know, you could do a roast in 1995. The only people that knew were the ones that were there, and if maybe a critic wrote about it.
Right.
Now, these things are televised, they're filmed, they live forever. How is it maybe it's not. How is it different for you when you come out of them now and the way they are received?
They're elevated. You know, when I was a young comic, I pushed real hard to get them on TV. The old guard liked it private. The old school comics, they didn't want to be on TV saying curse words. Mm. That was off their brand. And I was young. I was like, this is my brand. But no one's seen it except, you know, local fancy people in New York. And we roasted Boomer once at the Friars Club.
We were there.
And it was a highlight because you get to roast people you grew up watching or you rooted for. And you watched win big games growing up here. And like as just a fan of sports and as a fan of popular culture, like I couldn't believe it. Then I was like, wait, everyone should see this. So I really pushed to keep it going. Every time the roast died, I did whatever I could to revive it. And now it's the Super Bowl of comedy. It's the World Cup of comedy because people all over the world are watching it, and now they're live, and now the best comics in the world are stepping up to do these things. And obviously, we called it the Groat Roast, the greatest roast of all time. When Tom signed on, it's elevated to the Forum. I mean, we did it in front of 10,000 fans. Mm. So when we walked out there, it was gladiator world.
Yeah.
You didn't also just do it in front of 10,000 fans. You did it against people who have legit power.
Yeah.
You know, so it's different. And when you see Dana White in the crowd, when you see some politicians in the crowd, you see people who definitely move things and make things happen. Has there ever been a point in your career where after a roast you're like, man, I may be done here?
Yeah. I guess a few times, but not on the scale. With the roast that you're talking about, everybody who's invited opts in. Okay. Once they opt in, Willie, they're in. It's like once they volunteer, they kind of know what they're coming for.
So they're fair game.
The real insult would be ignoring them.
Mm.
Like somebody's as made as Robert Kraft or Bill Belichick or, you know, all the guys that were there, Dana White. He came in for rehearsals. He wanted to do well.
So committed.
He wanted to represent his league. He had his best fighter sitting there with him. So it was an opportunity to be part of the fun. And that's what I admire about the people that came in. Not everybody's got thick skin like that. But the people that come into these roasts, they're showing the fans, they're showing the fam that they are not above criticism, jokes. They could take it. It shows sportsmanship.
Mm. Very interesting. When you started as a comedian, though, correct? Not as a roast, probably.
Yeah, I'm still a comedian.
So still here. I'm in a stand-up.
Of course. Right. No, I get it. It was definitely a pivot.
What was that moment that you changed from stand-up comedian to, I mean, you've got to be the most famous roast. There's no one else that I think of other than you. What was the moment where you went in that direction?
I got asked to do a roast in the mid-90s. They were having a hard time getting people back then. And everybody said it was corny. It was antiquated. And I was like, but I get to meet Milton Berle and Buddy Hackett and Don Rickles. I was like, I'll try that. I didn't care about Steven Seagal, but I wanted to meet the legends, the Mount Rushmore, the comics. So and you couldn't even look it up back then. There was no Google, YouTube. I had to go to the Museum of Broadcasting, watch these old videos just to see how the game worked, see how far you could go, see what the dais looks like, see what the jokes sounded like, see how people reacted. And right away, I started writing and writing and writing. And then I walked out my first time, and it was one of my first times on stage, not in a comedy club, but in a big ballroom. And the mayor was there and all these, you know, New York hoity-toity people were there and these legendary comics and movie stars. And I went up prepared and I killed. And I was like, this is my Yankee Stadium right here. This is my lane.
Pretty cool.
You obviously, you've cooked up Donald Trump before.
Yeah.
Is there a chance, would you be able to cook him up again?
I'm afraid to get deported.
That's a fair answer.
I like this country. I'm worried.
That's Jeff Ross with us. Tickets on sale, jeffrossbroadway.com. Take a Banana for the Ride starts August 5th with the previews, but opening night August 18th. You mentioned all the legends.
Yeah.
Did you ever meet Jackie Gleason?
I never met Jackie.
He was one you didn't. Okay.
He was before, slightly before.
Because he
my
was
time.
Part of those two, right? In that group of older comedians that would get roasted and be part of it.
I don't know. I think he may have been part of that whole Dean Martin era.
Yeah.
But I think he might have been gone by the time I started.
What was your biggest. So, your biggest influence, clearly your parents and your grandfather.
Yeah.
Was it more that or was it more Hollywood and the comedians you're talking about?
You know, I developed my sense of humor early on. I grew up in a catering hall in New Jersey, weddings. And I was the boss's son. Oh, look at that.
Look at the hair.
Yeah, look at that. I had big, beautiful
wow.
hair.
That is unbelievable. That's that's going to be me soon. I'm going to be going from that to this. Yes. Wow.
Well, it happens to a lot of us.
All of us almost, actually. But anyway, you were saying the catering hall.
Yeah. And the catering hall, I was the boss's son. My dad ran the catering hall and I was the boss's son. So everybody made fun of me for being the boss's son. And everybody was from different worlds. Like there were the waitresses were all Irish and Scottish, and the guy who made the fruit cups was German, and the guy who made the Jello molds was Hungarian, and Haitian guys ran the kitchen, and I was just the boss's son, and they would all clown on me. I was just some high school kid trying to work, make some money myself, and I learned how to take it. I learned how to dish it out, and I learned how to take it, and it was kind of like my origin story was in this kitchen in the heat for real. You hear that expression, if you can't stand the heat, get out. And that's really what I was living in. And it made me work harder. And I developed thick skin and a sense of humor. And I understood the power of a joke, that it could really like neutralize somebody, enemy, a bully, an opponent. And I kind of took that to college and didn't really understand I was funny. At college in Boston, I didn't understand that comedy was even a thing that somebody could do until way after, when a friend suggested to try it. And then when I tried it, I realized, oh man, this is wild.
Like intoxicating, right?
Yeah. I mean, I wanted to go on every night. I wanted to, being a comic, it's like a backstage pass to the universe. I got to meet the world. I got to go everywhere, and I still do. Sometimes I can't even believe it's real.
You're speaking about comedy as a whole. I've heard recent pushback of comics who do more crowd work than actually prepare a set. Are you against comics who stand up there and roast a crowd for an hour and say, all right, thanks for coming out? Or are you like, hey, man, I put in the 9 to 5 and actually put together a set that can kill anywhere and everywhere?
Yeah.
There's a difference from saying you're a comic by just roasting people in the front of you than saying, hey, man, I'm putting on a show and trying to make people laugh.
Yeah, that's a great question. I'm not a hater like that because I also enjoy making fun of the audience, so I'd be a hypocrite.
Sure.
I call it roasting. I'm more formal about it. They have to opt in. I don't just start coming out on people because, I don't know, that's triggering for some people.
Yeah.
But I like that the crowd work comics are kind of embracing the audience. I love the what do you call it, the immersive experience that comedy is now, where you go there, you might be part of the show. And my shows have always been like that. So I just see it as comics catching up to what I've been doing for a long time.
Can you stay for a minute? Can we take a quick break?
Sure, take a break.
All right, we're going to take a quick break. We'll come back with Jeff Ross in just a moment. It's Willie and Jerry in for Boomer and Geo on the Fan and CBS Sports Network. Don't go anywhere.
It's the Boomer and Geo podcast from WFAN.
All right, the guys are out. They'll be back next week. Willie and Jerry in for Boomer and Geo, Built Ford Tough Studio. We'll get back to the calls and all sports in just a few minutes, but a few more minutes with Jeff Ross. He's got.
Where
a
does
new
Boomer go for vacation?
Golf course.
Somewhere where there's no sun?
No. No. A lot of sun, a lot of golf, and I would say a lot of privacy.
I guess so.
Is that about right, would you say? It's pretty much it. That's the voice of Jeff Ross. Take a Banana for the Ride is the new Broadway show that will open August 5th with previews, but opening night is actually Monday, August 18th. 8-week run. For tickets, visit jeffrossbroadway.com. I told you when you came in.
8 shows a week, by the way.
That's a lot.
Maybe I could do some training, Willie. I don't know what. I never worked this hard in my life.
I see you 2 a day. For
sometimes,
a couple of days, yeah.
Sometimes.
I mean, I see you smoking a pack of Cools over there. I don't know if it's going to hold you back.
That's my candy cigarette.
Oh, not me, baby. I'll smoke, but not Cools.
So I said when you walked in, you know, like I said everyone knows who you are, but when I heard you on the Howard Stern show a couple of weeks ago, I couldn't turn it off. From you talking about your childhood with your parents and your grandfather and then getting into the business. But what really got me was when you told the story about the colonoscopy that you had recently, and when you woke up, you had found out you had colon cancer.
Yeah.
Plus all the loss, the relationship with your sister to me was, it was, how did that change you, that whole experience?
Man, even though it was a fight, it really was a fight. You know, I had a tumor in my colon, and they caught it, they say they caught it early. They caught it not late, but not early. They caught it kind of in between, and that was my fault. My buddy had been hocking me, nagging my text chain for 2 years, go get a colonoscopy. And I was like, I don't want to deal with it. I don't want to do the prep. Turns out that's nothing. It was easy. Had a nice nap. Like the cleanse, it was, especially for, I don't know, I just didn't think it was the stuff you can go through in life, that was not a big deal. And I wish I'd done it sooner. So everybody out there, I promise you it's not a big deal. What is a big deal is waiting on it. That was really dumb. It was the biggest mistake of my life. And I had surgery. I had part of my colon taken out, which sounds really drastic, and it is, but our colons are long. They're like the dozens of feet long. So if you take 7 inches out, you're okay.
Right.
And I had to do chemo and all that, and I was really scared. But it's not like when I was a kid and my mom had chemo. We can take it now. It's so much more evolved that I was able to still shoot a Netflix special while it was going on. And
wow.
And, you know, what I learned more importantly than anything else is the team. It's not just you, it's the whole team. It was my sister, my cousins, my aunts, my family, my neighbors, pushing me, making me laugh, making me the right types of food, keeping me laughing through it. That was what got me to this place where I'm healthy and I'm on Broadway. It's like you asked me a year ago if I'd be sitting here talking up my Broadway show. It would have been impossible.
Did it almost motivate you to do something else like the Broadway show?
It did, because I'd been working on this when I got diagnosed. And I had to stop all year last year. After the Tom Brady roast, I had to check out. I had to stop, and I've never stopped. I'm like, go, 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 go. You know, comedy doesn't have seasons. We just go. You know, so comics go until they're 90, 100. You know, we don't retire. So when I was like, whoa, is this a forced retirement? What is this? Is like, you know, if I can't perform, who am I?
Well, no, I mean, I listened to that, and it's tough to hear, because after the Brady roast, I mean, you couldn't have been hotter than ever, right? Like, you imagine, you talk about Nikki Glaser and the wave she was able to ride after that, and every other comic, even Kill Tony and what he does in his platform, and all these other guys have been able to eat off that one roast.
Yeah.
And now you're sitting here saying, man, when that thing sprung, I had to slow it down from a mental side, because I know we talk about the mental roller coaster comedians go through, right? And they obviously they go through a lot of dark alleys. And most comedians, when they like to admit it, or some do, they're dark people, right? Yeah. And the only light they get to shine is through their comedy.
Yeah.
How, outside of your sister and your family, was there anything, like for me, just for example, when I was training for the, training for the training camp, I went to Arizona, and I went to a labyrinth. I went to a resort, a spiritual resort, and I walked the labyrinth, and I met with somebody, and I kind of got one with nature. And I felt like that prepared me for the season from a mental and spiritual point, right? And it allowed me kind of not only detox spiritually and mentally, but also kind of welcome in new things, let go of the old and welcome the new. During this process, have you been able to do that?
That's a great question. Very, very elevated question.
A little deep for 8:55 in the morning.
What's the coffee? Yeah.
You know,
and Al Dukes does it to me for some reason.
I do think we work on our bodies. We want to stay healthy, but our minds sometimes kind of go along for that ride. And now that my body is back together, I am spending time on my brain, my mind, my mood, my all that.
Less porn. It helps.
Less porn
you
helps.
Detox that.
And the drugs help with that. The painkillers. You're like, all right, maybe I'll just watch a movie right instead tonight. Save some time. But, yeah, and now I'm coming around to that part of it where I want to keep my brain healthy and protect myself and understand what I went through so that if it happens to Gannon or if it happens to a buddy, I know how to advise them. I know how to get through it myself. And they kind of go together. You know, it's here that yin-yang, the body and the mind, but now I really see it.
Mm.
And I don't want to be the preachy guy going, guys, get the colonoscopies. But
yeah, people hate those guys.
But
until
you need
you're that guy.
Yeah.
But I posted on my text chain a picture of what they took out of me, and all my buddies went and got colonoscopies.
So you saw it?
Yeah.
What did any
it
roast
looked like
beef
something
lodged?
They sell.
Pastrami lodged in there?
It looked like a fettuccine Alfredo dipped in a vodka sauce. It looked delicious. 7 inches of my colon.
Ay, ay, ay.
Now I got a semicolon.
Well, it resonated with me because I just had a colonoscopy about 4 or 5 months ago. And same thing like you're talking about. You wake up and the doctor's there and the first thing you think is, what? Wow, that didn't take long, and you're wondering what he's going to say.
Yeah.
I was okay, you weren't, but
yeah.
Now you are, and that's good. Keep it light here at the end. So, Jeff Ross, with us just a couple more minutes. Who do you like now? I mean, you've seen everybody. He mentioned Nikki Glaser. Give me a couple of names that in comedy that catch you as the veteran guy.
I love this. I mean, obviously, Nikki conquered that roast. She was brilliant. Anybody who's willing to... Buddy Hackett was my mentor. He used to say, anybody who walks the last 30 feet, you know, that's who he respected. You know, you get a lot of advice in this business from everybody, but there's something, it's just like ball, you know, who suits up and who doesn't? Who walks that last 30 feet from the wings to the microphone? And there's so many funny people now. I love Jessica Curson. She kills me. Tom Pappas crushing it. These guys... Sam Morrell and Mark Norman crack me up. They did my end of the year Netflix special on which you can watch. Man, Mike Lawrence is hilarious. I saw David Tell the other night just crushing it right here at the Comedy Cellar. He tours the world. We did our Bumping Mike special together. Mm. There's so many funny people right now. I think the world is so spinning off its axis right now.
Is that because of social media and everyone's got a platform and can be discovered almost? Like, is it easier to be found now if you're funny on YouTube and Instagram as opposed to 1995?
It's easier to be found, but it's tougher to stay there.
Mm.
Well, yeah. I think to Jerry's point, I look at, you know, you look at Tom Segura, right,
yeah.
and Bert, like they're two Bears podcasts,
yeah.
right? Like, I'm a big Tom Segura guy. I love Andrew Schultz. I consider him a homie. But some of these guys' platforms have elevated them to the point where you may not go see them live because you listen to them so much on their podcast and on YouTube platforms.
People are going to see those guys live.
Yeah.
Those guys are playing arenas. And I admire that because they committed to that, their own business, their own podcast. And that made their audience go, oh, I know these guys. They're coming to my town. I got to go see what's up. So I love that. Those guys worked decades to be able to hold an audience, not just on the podcast, but to go out on a random Thursday, Friday, Saturday at 8 o'clock and hold people for an hour.
Mm.
A lot of people get, like we were talking about earlier, the crowd work comics, Instagram comics, they get that pop and maybe they sell out once or twice, but that audience might not come back.
Mm.
They might go, oh, that wasn't quite, you know, I was walking my dog late last night and this couple walked by. And they were like, Jeff, we just came from a comedy club and it wasn't good. We just bought tickets to your show. We love your show. And I kind of felt bad for the comics they saw, but also like, yeah, it's because I put
in that work
to make sure it's a great night out. It's not just about the meet and greet and, oh, I saw him or her on YouTube and now I got to see him in person. It's like, not only did I see them, but that was, like, amazing. I never seen my husband laugh that hard. I never saw, you know, my grandma's been sad since the cat died. I never saw her laugh that hard. Like, that's what I'm going for. I want to, like, I want to like reboot people's brains when they see me.
And that's a good place to end. The show is called Take a Banana for the Ride. Jeff Ross is the comedian to my right. Previews begin Tuesday, August 5th. Opening night, Monday, August 18th. Limited 8-week engagement at the Nederlander Theater through September 29th. Tickets on sale now. JeffRossBroadway.com. Can't thank you enough for getting up and coming. Appreciate it.
I host a night of comedy for my foundation at the Gotham Comedy Club. So shout out to Steve and Chris Mazzilli, man.
Oh, wow. I
would love
guys.
To have you.
Come on.
Yeah, come chop it
I'll
up.
Give you my number, Willie. Yeah. I really enjoyed this conversation.
And you can make as many black jokes as you want.
I got lots of black jokes.
I know you do.
Am I the first person ever to talk up a Broadway show on this station? I might be.
I don't know. We've had a lot of people in over the last 17 years, but perhaps it's possible. Yes.
I love it. I'm finding a new I'm bringing the sports fans to Broadway.
I'm coming to see you.
Thank you.
Yeah.
That'd be fun. Come say hi backstage.
Of course. As long as you have food.
Always. Dude, I'm a biggie. I'm the only comic that could eat a pastrami sandwich 10 minutes before walking on stage. That's probably luck. What gave me colon cancer.
Good luck with that, and good luck with the show. Thank you very much, Jeff. Really appreciate it. Thanks, Jeff Ross, everybody. There's this notion, because you just brought up he grew up in Boston, you know, Red Sox fan.
Yeah.
I think maybe it's the afternoon guys. Maybe it's not. I think it was. I think even Tiki said it, and I think Sean did as well, whereas they're talking about how if my kid ended up on the... I'm still a Yankee fan. Yeah, okay, I'm not changing. Yeah. Well. There's no way. I think that's a fun thing to say when your kids are little. There is no way that those two guys would not put a Red Sox cap on if their kid went to the mound pitching for the Red Sox. I'm sorry.
I don't know if I'd put the cap on. Oh, but yes,
you would. You would be
kid.
So smitten with your kid taking the mound in a major league game. You would become a Red Sox fan overnight. You would. And anybody that says you're lying to yourself.
I'm not. I wouldn't root against my kid. I don't know if I'd put all the like.
So you'd want your kid to go out there and pitch well but lose.
No. I'm just saying I don't know that I'd be like, hey, look at me with my hat and my jersey.
I hope one of your kids gets to play for the Islanders.
Yeah. Islanders wouldn't bother me as much as the Devils. Yeah.
Okay. I would love to see little Lapresti playing for the Devils.
Wouldn't be so little at that point.
Well, you know what I mean. And then you're really going to sit there and tell me.
Was he physically tough enough to get to the NHL Stanley Cup Finals?
Oh, you heard that the
other
day?
Of course I heard it.
The hell was that?
That was the call you took. Yesterday. The guy you wanted to wedge in, the guy who called about the Rangers.
Strong on paper, boy.
And he was a little...
Oh, he was an older man from Michigan.
Yeah.
He was an older man from Michigan.
You're mocking the elderly now?
Yes. That elderly person, yes. He joined the show. That's how it works.
That's right. Once you come
you
on
the air.
You
join the fray, you deal with the what comes.
All
that's
bets just are off.
That's it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But no. I would have a tough time wearing Red Sox.
No, yeah. No, you wouldn't.
I would.
Yes,
you would. Wouldn't. I would. You I would root not. For my child.
I'm sorry you would not.
I would still be a Yankee fan. You can't take that out of me.
I didn't say you wouldn't be a Yankee fan. What I'm saying is you would root for that team and your son to have a lot of success. You would.
Not that team.
You wouldn't want your son to be a World Series champion. Seriously.
Of course, but.
Okay, no, that's it. You just answered the question. That's it. That's the answer.
Again, yeah. You root for you pull for the team to do well because your son's on
saying.
It, but you're not out there, you know, waving.
I
the
didn't
pom-poms,
say you're going to become the team mascot.
Well, you said put the hat on.
But if
on,
you didn't so. Think, if you don't think that if your son played for the Devils, that you wouldn't be wanting them to go win the Stanley Cup Finals, you're out of your mind.
You're telling. So my son plays for the Boston Red Sox.
Yeah.
It's the ALCS, Yankees versus Red Sox.
Mm-hmm.
I have to root for the Red Sox to win the series.
I think you're a heartless prick if you don't. That's what I would think.
I don't know.
I mean,
man.
You're already wearing Eagles stuff. That's a good point.
Right.
That's a good point.
Wait,
and
what?
That's,
I'm
and that's a meaningless Pop
yeah, but
Warner.
That's yeah. My what? Son's my
right,
son's
tough guy.
Yeah. Well, I haven't worn the Eagles stuff. I was a fill-in coach, but
okay.
My son's flag football team is the Eagles.
All right, that. Okay, but yeah. You're not putting on the Eagles stuff.
He's the head coach.
No, well,
he should wear. He should wear the hat.
The Eagles hat.
No.
He should.
No. I'm sure it's
he
the,
should.
It's the yes. NFL flag jerseys.
Correct.
But yeah, same in my town. The yep. coaches don't have to wear.
He
the
should.
Team
if he
no.
wants to be a leader,
no.
I didn't.
And set a good example.
I did say
should.
Go Eagles begrudgingly.
Fly Eagles, fly.
No, well, not even that far. So, I pushed for just. Can we just say Philadelphia?
Yeah, right. No,
yeah, that's first step. Next thing, black mass.
So you're talking about your Yankees fandom. This came up on the warm-up show as well, in addition
yes.
to Al wanting to interview about the overnight callers.
Mm-hmm.
He's like, who's the biggest Yankee fan here at the station? And I whittled it down to you and Keith.
Yeah, keep and whittling. Then,
okay, well, I said to Al, we should put him on the spot and ask him how does he differentiate himself? Why do we put C-Mac above McPherson?
You cannot be a bigger Yankee fan than I am. fan. I'll just put it that way. That's
it's you.
That's right. You're a fan of BT.
Well, Al brought him up. I said no disrespect to BT. I just think that life for McMonagle revolves around the Yankees a little bit more than BT.
Yeah, like for example, like last night I was at the football field. Like I don't check scores. I tell everyone in my circle, don't bring up scores to me. I don't care what I'm doing, what time of day it is. I will go home and start the game at 1 o'clock, 2 o'clock in the morning, or I will do it the next morning. Like I don't miss an inning. I don't miss a pitch.
Yeah.
I don't miss a thing. I score the games.
He's neurotic like Evan is.
I am.
With the Mets.
But not at the games, which is a little different.
Yes,
I don't do it at the games.
But he sets up his day and his night around making sure he can commit the time to the Yankees.
Correct. Yeah. I don't miss a pitch.
For McPherson, it's a little different because he's often on the air either not during the games, but
shortly after
going from the stadium to the studio.
Sure.
So a little bit of a different
situation. I don't
want to
say that Keith isn't a huge Yankee fan. I'm just saying I don't know how you could possibly be a bigger Yankee fan than I am.
That's a fair answer. Keith in Ocean Gate. What's up, Keith?
Hey, what's going on, guys?
How are you?
What's up?
Hey, I just wanted to talk. I was talking to my wife last night about this whole Red Sox, Yankees, wearing the jersey thing. So if my kid was pitching for the Red Sox, we both said that we would absolutely never wear anything Red Sox.
I disagree. How old are your kids?
I can see where you're coming from, Gary, but like, I am like, there's so many fans in this town that would say the exact same thing. I get it. If my son was on the mound pitching for the Yankees or the Red Sox, I would literally be crying. It would be emotional. I just would never put on a Red Sox uniform. I'm sorry.
Well, but there are two different things here, though, too. We're talking about, like looking like a mascot, or are you rooting for them to win?
Well, that's where you can root, but you don't have of to course. Go all well, the way yeah. to...
But you'd still be rooting for your kid and that team to win.
Yes. In that game.
Yeah.
Well, no. So I'm going to ask. So, Keith, I'll ask you the question. Your son is the number two pitcher on the Red Sox. How old is he now?
He's only 4 and a half.
Oh, Christ. Good Lord.
I knew that was coming.
He's 4 and a half.
Long pause.
Oh my God. So you haven't even gone through any of the trials and tribulations.
He's 9 months old.
My God. But that's fine because I do think this changes as they get older and you watch them play.
Yeah.
So in the year 2020, where the hell are we? 2025, let's say 20 years from now. All right, so in the year 2049, your son is the number two pitcher on the Boston Red Sox. And they're in the World Series.
Mm-hmm.
You don't want him to become a World Series champion. You don't.
No,
of
I do.
Of course you do.
100% I do.
But of course you do.
Of course I do. At that point, absolutely I do.
Well, what other point is there? That's what we're saying.
The ALCS against the Yankees.
Boy, I tell you, bad guy.
Day he pitches, 100%, I want him to be successful.
Game seven.
Then I would.
Oh, what do I do? You root for your kid.
You root for your kid. You root for your kid.
And also that he gets the World Series, more money, more notoriety, the whole thing.
Everything.
Sodas would be all about that. Need that bonus.
Buys you and your wife a new home. Everything's good.
I understand that. He's not going to buy it in Boston.
Your kid in a parade.
Nor should he.
And I'm not going to. Yeah, we can go.
Yes, you would.
Parade, I'd go.
Yes, you would.
I would. And I would probably wear.
Everybody talks tough when the kid's little.
Wait, what are you going to wear now?
No.
Yeah, if they win a championship, my son's a championship.
Oh, come on, now we're going to wear a championship shirt.
I'll wear his jersey.
Come on, Jerry.
I'll wear his jersey.
And he should. It's his son, for God's sakes. Come on.
I'm specifically rooting against the Yankees. That's my problem. That's where I'm like, I don't know how I would handle it.
Yeah.
Once they're and they're in the World Series playing anybody, the Mets to the Dodgers, doesn't matter.
Okay,
I will root for my son.
What you're saying.
I'm saying versus the Yankees in particular, I would have a tough time. Like wearing Red Sox stuff in Yankee Stadium because my son's making the
I don't care what you wear. I just mean, you got to be rooting for your kid.
And here's
a better
scenario. Right, he's the closer for the Red Sox.
Oh. Yeah.
So four like times. Right. Bang, 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 bang.
It's not just one or two starts in a series. Yeah. Every week he's on the mound.
No, yeah, I would. I can't envision rooting for the Red Sox over the Yankees no matter what the circumstances.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. Yeah.
Even with my son, I root for him to do well. I don't know how I could root for the Yankees to lose.
Childless and godless over here, I'm with Jerry. You're with your child.
I guess I'm just godless.
Well, that's Eddie. That is true.
The Yankee hater in there. Yeah. I'd love to see.
He's just letting you know my opinion's relatively less important than all of yours, but this is what I would say.
Right.
That's not true.
Well, that's kind of what he's saying.
an alternate universe where Eddie's got his son pitching for the Yankees, closing out the Mets in the second ever World Series the two have played against each other.
That's,
I think he'd have a little bit more of a struggle than
I'm honestly with Jerry. Yeah.
I believe
I'm telling you. I really think most people, except sick people.
Guy who celebrates YE Day every year over here.
Yeah, exactly.
But
right.
All of a sudden, no problem.
It's different.
Yeah.
It's just different.
Once that happens, it changes.
I understand. I would never root against my son playing the game. I would want, if he's a hitter, I hope he hits a home run every at bat. If he's a pitcher, I hope he gets every strikeout. But I'm just saying, the idea of rooting against the Yankees is tough for me, even with my son
on the team.
I'm not
saying it's difficult.
Yeah.
It's possible. It's possible.
Some people follow the rules, but where's the fun in that? I'm Soraya, and this is Rule Breakers, the podcast where we celebrate the rebels, the misfits, and the ones who make their own way. Every week, I sit down with the biggest rule breakers in sports, entertainment, and beyond to talk about the wildest moments, toughest lessons, and why breaking the rules might just be the key to success. Follow and listen to Rule Breakers with Soraya, an Odyssey podcast, available now for free on the Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.